You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network. PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Card.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave back. Sorry we missed again last week, but we are back again this week. Talking about a Packers 27-20 victory over the San Diego Lightning Bolts. The Packers now go to 6-0. And I don't know if you've been following much of the news, Dave, because I know you've been busy working and traveling and all that stuff, but you would think that the Packers were like 2-4, like they had the record that the Chargers have, instead of being 6-0, with the amount of angst that is circulating around Packer International right now. People are very concerned because the offense, you know, looks a little sluggish, and they just allowed Philip Rivers to go off for over 500 yards in passing, and you know, people are really concerned about a team that's 6-0. Are you one of those people?
No, I'm really not, because I was thinking about this. Philip Rivers threw 65 passes for over 500 yards, and we still won. So how do you look at that victory? Do you see it as, wow, we won despite him throwing 500 yards, or are you going to be just filled with anxiety because he threw for 500 yards? I think the ability to take someone's best shot, I think the Chargers are not a bad team. I think they've taken some – they were 2-3 when they played the Packers, but they – should have beaten Pittsburgh, and yeah. I think they've had some other good games. And, you know, you look around the league, and who is a good team? And I think the Chargers are an upper-tier team, and we took their best shot. You could tell they tried very hard against the Packers, going for it on fourth down, you know, going for it before the end of the half to try and score instead of kicking a field goal. I mean, I think they laid it all out, and we still won. So I think I can look at this and think, look, 6-0 is great. Why am I overthinking a victory by the Packers? There are some great things that happen. They're dealing with a lot of injuries, which you just can't ignore that. If you'd have just told me at the beginning of the season that their defense would look this good, despite what happened against Chargers, and they'd be 6-0, I'd have been thrilled. So I don't know. What are people complaining about? I haven't really been paying attention to what the news is saying.
Well, they're concerned, and again, if you pay attention to the call-in shows and, you know, some of the comments that you see in Q&As and that kind of stuff, people are concerned because, once again, it's a case where Dom Capers can't stop an elite quarterback because they gave up so much yardage, like it's the tied for the second most yardage that the Packers have ever given up passing. The top three passing yardage games against the Packers have all come during Dom Capers' tenure. Against Ben Roethlisberger, once in the season finale in 2011, that would have been the Lions' quarterback, Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, is that the Matt Flynn game?
Right, that was the Matt Flynn game. But the interesting thing is, of those two games, Stafford went for 520, Roethlisberger went for 503. That was the same as Philip Rivers. Packers won two out of three of those games.
Yeah.
And so, you know, passing for 500 yards, while it's ugly and doesn't look great, you know, I mean, the most important stat, and Micah Hyde said this, I don't know if you saw his quote, but he was saying, yeah, wow, I mean, Rivers was great. You know, it was amazing what he was able to do. But the last I checked, they only scored 20 points.
Yeah,
and
right.
That's a really good point. And so I can't be too upset, you know, when they score 27, which is, you know, what you kind of expect the Packers to score at a minimum, which is a good performance. And then defensively, if you hold the team to 20 points in today's NFL, that's pretty good.
Yep.
So 6-0 is not bad either. I mean, I think I had them for 4-2 at this point going into the bye week. So I'm not too concerned about it, but a lot of people apparently think there are style points that are given out in the NFL. I mean, I think they did away with that rule where style points counted. I don't think that matters. I think what matters is what's on the scoreboard, and that goes for the offense as well, and that's another, you know, concern people have because, you know, they don't think that the passing game looks very good. They didn't rush for a lot of yardage, or so it seemed anyway. But if you look at the stats, and this will be, I think, surprising to a lot of people, maybe surprise you because it sure surprised me, but Aaron Rodgers had a higher passer rating than Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's 107.7 against 99.7. You know, so he's eight points ahead, and he didn't have a bad day. You know, 16-29, 255, a couple of touchdowns, no picks, and then they also rushed for 133 yards. I mean, they didn't have a particularly bad game. I mean, they were kicking up close to 400 yards in offense. It was a solid performance. The defense, you know, just allowed a lot of underneath passes, and that meant that they couldn't get home on the rush because, you know, it was a lot of those, 7-yard, 8-yard, 11-yard kind of gains, and that, you know, doesn't really bother me if you keep everything in front of you and you're not getting busted for long touchdowns. It's really hard to put together drives like that that result in touchdowns, and I think that's what happened yesterday.
Yeah, and let's start with the defense first. The thing is, they thought, you're right, they kept it in front of them, and I thought they tackled pretty efficiently as well.
Right.
So there wasn't a lot of yardage after the catch. It felt like it was 5 yards tackle, 8 yards tackle, and what you were hoping for was finally a bad throw, which happened.
Twice.
Casey Hayward had interception for a touchdown. That was a 14-point swing. Mm-hmm. When that guy jumped off sides, yep. And they brought it back. So, you know, I think that's what you're hoping for when you're going to go with that many attempts. You just have to hand it to Phillip Rivers. As much as I couldn't stand watching his face and his mannerisms, right? I mean, you can tell he's a competitive guy, but, man, he bothers me. I felt if Pete Carroll was a player, he would be Phillip Rivers, wouldn't he? Like, just that over-complaining, whining look on his face, and but he had a great game. He never missed his guys. There was never the bad throws, you know, they ended up getting back. What was the second bad throw?
There was two by Sam Shields, should have had two interceptions.
Oh, that's right. He had one.
Dropped two that were in his hands. One would have been a pretty fine play, but the second was right there. And so at least one, probably two INTs. And then, of course, you're right, the Casey Hayward play, which I think was Mike Daniels might have jumped early on that.
No, it was the San Diego guy that jumped.
Oh, that's
actually.
Right. That, yeah.
So they brought it back. It was the best play he made.
Right.
But so, I mean, I guess if a guy's going to give you his best, I don't remember Phillip Rivers making too many mistakes. And it was 65 attempts and 43 catches. You know, he didn't give any to us. And I think that's what you have. But I wonder if the game had been 10-10 if they would have played defense differently. Did they intentionally just let the game play out this way? Let them have the yards. Let them average 7 yards. I think the average catch was 7.7 yards a catch. Let that happen. Keep it in front of us. Keep them out of the end zone. We're ahead by, well, you know, they ended up tying it up, but we were always, you know, ahead. We're never behind. They managed this game to a victory as opposed to what we'd like to see. We want to see them obliterate teams. And I don't know if you would have done that if you could do that against the Chargers. I just think you had a good game from their offense. And I don't quite understand why our offense didn't move the ball more. Maybe you can come back to that. But think about this, Chris. I was thinking as we were getting to the third and fourth quarter, I thought I appreciate the fact that they were trying to get to Rivers. I don't think Dom ever gave up on sending pressure and trying to get to him. It's just that they threw that ball out so quick. And I thought there was one play in particular where they really loaded up. You could see them coming, And he flipped it quick to what's-his-face, Woodhead.
Right.
And then, boom, he was out and running, and he got like an 8-yard carry or something, or 8-yard pass. And I thought, maybe they should mix it up and rush three and go to coverage and just mix that up, because they are not able to get to him because he's throwing so quickly. Why not mix that up? They never did that. And part of me feels like, you know, good, because I wanted to be overly aggressive. Just if you don't get home, keep trying. And they did ultimately get a couple sacks on him. So what do you think? Do you think they should have changed up their strategy a little bit to see if that could have thrown him off the rhythm? Or do you just like, nope, we are aggressive, we're going after him, and if you throw it quick, well, that means you have short completions and we'll beat you anyway.
I think their strategy stayed the same, and the strategy being you're going to have to beat us by piecing together 10 and 12 play drives. Their tactics, on the other hand, that could be open for some discussion. I mean, do you want to play coverage? And I'm not sure that they really wanted to. I mean, I don't know if that would have had a lot of difference, because San Diego was very happy to take whatever the Packers gave them underneath. And the Packers were fine letting them have that, because, you know, it's very hard for NFL teams to not shoot themselves in the foot. In other words, to go on these long drives. And I think that is a strategic decision that the Packers under Dom Capers have been about. You know, make them earn everything that they get. Don't give them anything easy and cheap, because eventually they will commit a penalty, they'll fumble the ball, they'll throw an interception, something will happen. And so I think it's a defense that's predicated on the other team making a mistake and hurting themselves, either by turning it over or committing a penalty. And had Shields intercepted those balls, or had the Hayward pick gone, I mean,
it would have been a blowout.
Yeah, exactly right. Even with the limitations the Packers have on offense, and so defensively, yeah, it doesn't look good, and it looks terrible when Allen was, you know, just, you know, getting catch after catch after catch, but they were all short. I mean, the guy averaged 11.2 long of 38. There wasn't really a lot of fractures. It was a 150-yard pass. But otherwise, you're talking about long catches of 21, 25, 14, 19. It really wasn't, you know, the kind of thing where they were, like where Peyton Manning was, you know, taking those Mike Sherman teams, you know, to task when they were averaging 25 yards a pass and running up 46 points or something. But
right.
It wasn't really like that. In fact, when they got close to the goal line, I think they were 4 of 6 in the red zone, San Diego was. And they had 2 touchdowns, and they had 2 field goals, and they had twice where they weren't able to convert in the red zone, including at the very end on a really sweet play by Randall.
Yeah, it was great.
And I think that's just kind of how, you know, strategically how they want to play this. You know, they want to make you earn it, and it's going to be real tough against them in the red zone. And, you know, we saw that yesterday, and it's hard to argue with it when you hold a team to 20 points. Forget about the yardage. You hold a team to 20 points, you come away with a win at a time when your offense is limited. I mean, it's hard for me to get too worked up about that in a negative sense.
Yeah, I really like to be listening to the headset and hear what the coaches are saying during the game, because I wonder if the defensive strategy changed when the offense, when Ty Montgomery went down – and the offense started to struggle. It was, look, we can't afford to get this away from us. Keep it in front of us. The idea that the offense can make up for mistakes if they get a quick 7 is not there anymore, because the offense is stalling. Eddie Lacy's not himself. Ty Montgomery just went down. You know, Davante Adams isn't playing. I don't know if we can rely on Starks and the rest to keep up with San Diego. So let them wear themselves out. And sure enough, you know, look at Keenan Allen. You just can't do that forever. He ended up getting hurt by catching
many
balls.
I know it was a hip injury, but at first I thought he was just exhausted from catching 14 of the 15 balls thrown away. And that was like midway through the third quarter. I mean, had the guy stayed in the game the entire time, there's an argument to be made in our friend, you know, Mike in Ashwaubenon, you know, Big Snake Man. He thinks that, you know, if Allen stays healthy, they might have won that game. And Bob McGinn even said that in his synopsis of the game. That might have been true. As it was, though, you know, 14 catches in, you know, 2.5 quarters, he might have been looking at 20.
Yeah, well, they were talking. He was on pace to beat the NFL record,
yeah,
but
incredible.
I guess if that's what's going to happen, I remember in 2011, sort of the same thing happened, right? That the Packers would score so much that the other teams would end up getting a lot of yardage because all they could do, they had to abandon the run game, and they would throw, and Dom would just have this kind of, again, this is a bend, don't break. Although I think he was aggressive. I don't think they sat back in a zone and let them catch underneath stuff and then tackle him and let him move down the field between the 20s. I felt they were going after Rivers. They played man-to-man on the corners. A lot of times they're on an island, and I like that. I don't think every team can replicate what San Diego just did. You need a quarterback like Rivers who has to be hot and just make no mistakes. And I don't know how good the wide receivers are, but I mean, Keenan Allen certainly was bigger than our corners, and he didn't drop a whole lot.
Right.
But can Denver go out and just, you know what, now Denver's going to do that, or now Carolina's going to do that? I don't think that other teams can just replicate what San Diego did. And I think the Packers would adjust. So I am tending to give them the benefit of the doubt. They knew what they were to – the pros and cons of every approach. You know, I think they felt like, let them do this. I think we can manage the score to the end, run this clock out, and we're going to win, and they did. I don't think if the score was 10-10 – in the fourth quarter, if he would have still had 503 yards. I think things would have tightened up, and I think the defense would have done better. I'm a believer in this defense. I'm not looking at this 503 and think the defense is suffering.
You know, I am also a believer in this defense, at least as it compares to 2011. And a lot of people, you know, want to make that comparison. 2011 had a lot of – they got a lot of turnovers, as I recall, too, which is why they went 15-1 that season.
Yeah.
But I think this defense is better. It's more talented. But don't forget that they were playing without Morgan Burnett. They didn't have B.J. Raji. They didn't have Nick Perry, who's having a good season for them. And Raji's having a great season.
If you take out those players for San Diego or any team we play, take out your what could arguably be your best defensive lineman, potentially your best safety, you know, and I guess I don't know what you call Perry, but
a situational rusher, I would say. Yeah.
If you take out those three guys on any team, you know, will they play the same defense as they normally do? I didn't think as I was watching, I knew what I was seeing, that I was watching San Diego move down the field, but I never said to myself, this defense is terrible. And I know what a terrible defense looked like, and I've seen them look terrible before. This was just, we're so close. I think there were a lot of third downs. Right? I don't know what their third down conversion. I felt like
50%, I think, on third down. I'll look that up.
But didn't they have a lot of them? I don't know where that stat would be. But I didn't feel like it was first down, second down, first down, first down. You know, it's just they're getting chunks every single play. I felt that there were a lot of third down plays that was just close, and they just got past, a few things bounced our way.
They were 9 of 18 on third down.
18 third downs.
Yeah, well, yeah, they had 88 plays.
Is that a
plays.
Lot in the game?
You know, yeah. Or I'm sorry, they had 89 plays, excuse me. You know, and 89, the Packers had 49. So, you know, I mean, it's you're talking about the different, you know, 40 plays. You're talking about half a game, you know, more football, basically, that San Diego played.
You know, now you put it that way, our defense sucks. I change my mind.
But, you know, but the average offensive gain per play, 6.2, Packers 7.6. So, yeah, I mean, they had a lot of downs. They kept a lot of drives going. Part of that was the defense's fault in not being able to convert turnover opportunities when they had them. They did get the one or the two fumbles. I guess there was a couple fumbles on Melvin Gordon, which was a damn shame for, you know, Badger fans. But I was you know, delighted to see him, you know, cough it up. I just hope it doesn't wind up short-circuiting a career of a guy who I think is a tremendous talent. But that aside, you know, they did not get the turnovers that they needed when the opportunities presented themselves. And while I think Phillip Rivers had a great day, and I also believe they had a great, great game plan with the kind of pass rush the Packers have, and San Diego's playing with three backup offensive linemen, their strategy was fantastic. You know, they decided that they were going to go short. They were going to, you know, three-step drop, or actually kind of a two-step when you're working out of the shotgun. And I thought that was great. It negated the Packers' rush because there was no way that they could get to Rivers when he was getting the ball out of his hands that quickly. Now, the downside for San Diego is that they weren't gaining a lot of yards. I mean, they were gaining it in short chunks for the most part. And if they had tried, you know, to do more conventional dropback stuff, they know they would have been overwhelmed with that offensive line they had. So they were very smart, I think, in choosing the kind of offensive game plan that they did, because it negated the Packers' pass rush. And it allowed them to have, you know, to have a great shot at winning. The thing is, you can do that, though, when you have Phillip Rivers at quarterback. Not every team has somebody of that caliber. Now, Peyton Manning coming up against Denver in a couple of weeks, is he still that kind of quarterback? I mean, obviously he used to be, but he's struggling now as he's looking at 40 years old. And then you have Cam Newton coming up the week after that in Carolina. Cam's a pretty good quarterback, but is he as good as Phillip Rivers? You know, can he do those kinds of things?
Well, and it's more than just as he's good as Phillip Rivers, but can he play as well as Phillip Rivers did on that Sunday? Because, I mean, I think Phillip Rivers had a game and a half that he wouldn't normally have. So
I think that was his best game. I think maybe statistically it might have been the best game of his career, not in terms of passer rating, because he didn't even break 100, but in terms of the yardage, I think that might have been his best.
Yeah. Well, they certainly laid it all out on the field. I mean, I think there are some teams like the Bears who come in and they get behind and you can tell they just give up. And San Diego laid it all out on the table.
Exactly.
And, you know, they didn't win. I mean, you just can't take away the win for the Packers. I mean, maybe you can do this every game, but I just clicked off my box score. But if I would have told you that Rodgers was going to pass for only two touchdowns, Eddie Lacy would run for 3 yards, Ty Montgomery is getting hurt, and Phillip Rivers is going to throw for over 500 yards,
who do you think
is going to win?
I said, yeah, I mean, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
But that's not how it played out at all. You know, James Starks had a pretty darn good game. Now, you could make a point that, you know, the running backs, they only had 15 rushes, 17 total with the two Rodgers scrambles, but only 15 rushes. I mean, you could argue that maybe they should have run the ball a little bit more. You know, but they did wind up with 133 on the ground, thanks in large part to that 65 that Starks had. Wasn't that a tremendous play, huh? You know?
Yeah, that is I'm surprised you don't see that more often, where you get bunched up, and if you change direction, that defense is over pursuit.
Yep.
I think that's just everyone's so fast, and you got a gang tackle that if you can kind of get caught in the middle and then break the opposite direction, that side of the field ends up being wide open. So it was a great play by him, and good speed by him. I thought, I don't remember him being that quickly, but he holds the ball really loosely,
Did you ever see any – because you're not old enough to have seen Gale Sayers play. But but if you go back and look at the Gale Sayers highlights on YouTube or someplace, that's just the way Gale Sayers ran with the ball. Now, I'm not old enough to remember if he had a fumbling problem, but I do remember the way he carried it, and it's just the way you see James Starks carry the ball. It makes me nervous every time I see it, because in today's NFL, with the emphasis on ball security, you just don't see guys do that. And every time I'm expecting him to fumble, he did fumble, right?
Well, no, Eddie Lacy fumbled.
It was Lacy that fumbled.
Yeah, well, Lacy fumbled, and T.J. Lang with another huge recovery. When that happened, I thought, that's it, we're going to lose. I instantly went into my lose sort of, and then I saw that the Packers came out with it, and I thought, wow, that is that's a huge break. But I feel like that is offset by the huge break San Diego got with the Casey Hayward interception.
Oh, boy.
But great, great grab by T.J. Lang. Someone said the second – T.J. Lang, you know, in 2 years, T.J. Lang has had two huge fumble recoveries. I was trying to think, what was the one last year that he did? Because I vaguely remember him having a huge fumble recovery. I think it's against Dallas, because it was like in a huge moment. in the playoffs, but it escapes me when that was. But anyway, I thought the story of why this game was close, I don't think was really so much on the defense. I think it was on the offense, who you have to give a little bit of a break to because of the injury. But, you know, they came out and defense stopped San Diego. Then we get a touchdown. We get a second touchdown right away. Then we get a field goal. So now we're running, and then it's punt, punt, punt. You know, that stretch there from 17-3, I guess that would be from the second half into the third half when they ended up tying it up. What do? We ended up, I got it here, we had three and out, three and out, three and out. And that's where I thought the game went from, it was our game, to where we really made it a close game. Why we couldn't kind of punch it through and get yardage in the middle of the game. You know, in the heart of the game there, I thought was the big difference of making this close to a blowout.
Yeah, the offense, you know, you look at Rodgers' stats, and they're good. And, you know, they have a fair number of rushing yards. He threw to nine different receivers, too. But nobody had over two catches. You know, you have one, two, three, four, five, six, seven guys with two catches, led by Janice, you know, the people's champ, and then going all the way down to Ty Montgomery. I mean, you talk about spreading the ball around. I mean, that was pretty amazing as it was. So, you know, I mean, 16 to 29 is you know, not huge. You know, 255 is solid. It doesn't look like it did. It doesn't seem like the smooth running machine. You know, they went from what, late in the first quarter until midway through the third quarter without getting a first down. You know, it just, something was just not quite the way it needed to be. And it's hard to know exactly what it is about Rodgers and maybe, well, Jeff Janis is an example. He had a couple of catches. One would seem like kind of almost like a desperation on a scramble. He kind of pitched it ahead to him, and he was a great run after the catch. And then there was the one heave downfield that, you know, I mean,
who knew he was throwing to?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Rodgers said, well, yeah, I saw somebody at the corner of my eye. Well, if that's the kind of pass he's making where it's just like, I saw somebody, so I'm going to whip it down there. I mean, you know, people say he's really careful with the ball. Well, I guess not always, if that's what he's doing. And so Janice makes a catch. But there are other times, too, where, you know, he's rolling out to his right. He's being pursued. He's close to his own end zone. He has Janice kind of open in front of him, short gain, but he doesn't throw it to him. Instead, he throws it out of bounds.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't know what's going on with those two guys. He turned down a couple of opportunities to talk about Janice after the game yesterday. There's something going on there where those guys are not on the same page. And I don't mean that Janice is bothered with Rodgers. I think something about Janice that bothers Rodgers to the point where he just doesn't seem to like to look for him for some reason, and I'm not really sure why. I mean, you don't really know what the dynamic is that goes on at practice or anything else, but it sure as heck does seem that he'd rather not throw to him if he doesn't have to.
Yeah,
and
right.
When Montgomery went out of the game, it's almost like, you know, Rodgers is surveying the field, and it's like, okay, there's Janice. I'm not going to pass to him. So who else? You know, who else is available?
Oh, yeah,
nobody else
yeah.
is. I'm just going to throw it away or take a sack. You know,
it's something going on. He definitely doesn't trust his receivers at the moment. And you know, two of the punts that we had, the three and outs, were they ended with two sacks. I don't know how long he held the ball, but he's definitely not just trusting his receivers or throwing a guy open. And I get, you know, if Jordy Nelson's out there, you might throw it up for grabs a little bit because you know Jordy will at least knock it down if he won't catch
right.
it. I don't know if you can trust Janice to do that. But he's, man, I mean, we were up 17-3. We're up 17-10. I don't know. Maybe when you know you're favored, you're at home, you're like, look, I just take no chances. Don't turn the ball over. And that's what happened. We ended up winning. But I feel like his conservative nature and all the injuries we're taking is not gelling. Somehow, over the next two games, these are going to be much tighter games. I don't know if we're going to be as favored as we have. I think he's going to have to take a few more chances and trust his receivers. The other thing, and I think they pointed out in the broadcast quite a bit, is on a couple of those third downs when he got sacked, in other games, he kind of breaks out and runs for a first down, like he did in the first drive when he scored a touchdown. I think he ran for a first down on a third down. And somehow San Diego contained him much better than other teams have. And I don't know if that was intentional or a good job by San Diego, or just that's just sort of the way that it sort of fell into place. But
well, I saw something about that after the game. And I forget which writer. It might have been Domofsky writing after the game, mentioning that the defensive ends or the edge rushers for San Diego would not allow themselves to go upfield.
Off the field. Yeah. Yeah.
They would go no farther than Rodgers was deep. In other words, you know, they would go, they'd make pressure, but once they got to as deep as Rodgers was, they weren't going to run around the back like you see so many guys do, because that just creates an opening for him to step up and move. And
right.
So essentially they kind of held the edge of the pocket there, and that, you know, made it a lot tighter, and Rodgers had less place to go as a result. Now, that may be a blueprint that teams use in the same way that, you know, offensively against the Packers defense, teams might, you know, look for a lot more of the underneath quick passes. You know, teams defensively, you know, might rush four or five, but they won't let themselves get rushed out of the play. And,
well, then roll him out.
Yeah. Well,
right?
That may be how the Packers respond. But now, having seen this and seeing how San Diego was able to keep him in the pocket, now it's up to them to adjust. And they have 2 weeks now to think about it. They got a really good pass rush coming up against Denver. You know, Denver's one of the best. I don't know if they're one of the best defenses, but certainly one of the best pass rushes in the NFL. And they're playing on the road. The next two games are against teams that are currently undefeated on the road, and teams that have, you know, pretty good defenses, certainly in Denver. So it's going to be interesting to see how much those two teams and teams the rest of the season learn from the San Diego game tape. Now, they didn't shut the Packers down. No one shut the Packers down, but they contained them enough, 27 points, where, you know, it kept it realistic that a team could come back. You know, when you have 27
right.
points, yeah, you've got to score some, but there is the opportunity for your offense, you know, to keep yourself in the game. And, you know, they were one great play, you know, from Demaryius Randle, you know, away from perhaps going into overtime or maybe even losing on a two-point conversion. So it wouldn't surprise me to see teams kind of look at this tape and think, maybe we can do what San Diego did, but just do a little better than they did.
It's possible. But, you know, I think the Packers could improve as well. And they've always come out of the break with something, a new wrinkle, something different. I don't know if they necessarily need to make any wholesale changes on defense. But maybe now, you know, on offense, Davante Adams comes back, who I'm not a huge Davante Adams fan.
I'm not either.
So it's not like,
I'm not either.
We've talked about that before. I don't see him coming back as like, thank goodness he's back. I am looking forward to seeing Morgan Burnett and HaHa Clinton Dix come back together.
And B.J. Raji, too.
And, yes. And so I think that it'll be very interesting to see how they match up against Denver. They're going to have to figure out an offensive game plan that doesn't have Rodgers sit back there five-set, seven-step drops and hold the ball forever. He's going to get sacked quite a bit. And I think they got the players to be able to run a hurried up, you know, short passing kind of offense as well. They got guys like Cobb. Hopefully, I don't know if Montgomery will be back in time. Jones isn't necessarily that guy, but Janis, I would think, would be. He's fast. It's too bad they don't have a better running back out of the backfield to be a better kind of catch it, you know, quickly out of the backfield, like a Woodhead or someone like that. They don't really have that. But they got to figure something out, and otherwise, this defense is really going to step it up.
You know, I think Lacy catches better than a lot of people give him credit, but he's not right now. I mean,
I don't think so either.
There's been a lot of talk about he's fat and out of shape. I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is he's having difficulty moving on that ankle that he hurt. He looks slower than normal. He doesn't look like he has the niftiness, you know, for a big man. He's always had really good feet, sort of like Ron Dane had in college. That's something that Lacy's had, in the pros, and he's not had that since he's hurt that ankle, and I think that's the problem. I don't know if he's going to be better in 2 weeks. I doubt that Montgomery is going to be better in 2 weeks based on how he came off the field. We know it's not broken. The x-rays came back today negative, which was a good thing.
And it was ankle?
Yeah, but it's his ankle, and of course no one's saying how significantly sprained it is or how long he's going to be out. We probably won't know that till they start practicing again a week and a half from now. So, you know, maybe they get Davante Adams back, but they're not going to have Ty Montgomery the way it looks.
Well, on that note, why don't we take a break?
Yeah, let us take a break, come back, talk a little more about this game, get to the betting lines. Then we also have some news about a little trip that we're making over Lambeau Field we'll talk about too. So we'll have that for you in just a bit. It's Packers Therapy with Chris and Dave. Talking about the Packers going to 6-0 after a 27-20 win over the San Diego Superchargers. And this is Packers Therapy. Back with more Chris and Dave on Packers Therapy. There's some more things to cover, I think, Dave, when it comes to this victory over the Chargers at Lambeau Field on Sunday, 27-20. From the basis of our conversation, I think we're kind of on the same page here that we're not.
It's happening more and more often through our season.
You know, this is our 11th season, so I would hope that after all this time, you've probably, you know, finally come around to seeing things my way. So
I think I've met you more than halfway.
Well, and
I bet the first few seasons we used to argue quite a bit.
That's right, and the old days. I think, you know, John from Scotland probably remembers those days fondly. But and we also used to be face to face. Now we're like 600 miles apart. So
that would make me angry.
Yeah,
right.
That's exactly right.
That would. It could be the alcohol too.
You know what? We should just reminisce for the next 20 minutes about what the podcast used to be.
All 11 seasons.
Oh, that's right. And then there was that time in 2007. No, okay.
Remember those big mics we ended up getting?
They were great.
Yeah, they were.
Back in the Packer chatter days, yeah.
They're collecting dust now, except my son pulled them out, and he might do his own podcast.
Really?
Yes.
What would be the subject of this podcast? Would it be on PackersTalk.com?
No, it will not be. He's not following his father's footsteps. I think it'll be, like most kids, it might be video game related or I'm not quite sure. But it does kind of make me proud. It's like he's following in his old man's footsteps, you know, to a degree. Still won't watch the game with me, though. In fact, if you can picture this, so I watched the game myself in my basement. And, when, you know, it's time for me to make the trek down to the basement. I think I get the picture that my family huddles up here like it's a full moon and the werewolf is running around outside. They could hear me clapping early, and then it got silent.
Mm-hmm.
And they know not to, like, or they don't come downstairs. And then finally, I was curious, what's your reaction? When Randall knocked that ball down, my reaction was I started to yell, thank you. That was how I responded to it.
I think
so. They knew they could come down because they knew it was about game time. They heard thank you, and they all started to, you know, the sun has come up, the werewolf is now gone, and they can come down and see their father.
It was pretty electrifying end, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean.
He looked open for a second.
Well, he did. And I don't know if you read what Randall said, is that he was kind of baiting Rivers, but he was watching him the whole way. He saw that the receiver was there. He slacked off him. So that he would go in that direction. I mean, and that's the way it looked. I do watch the games with my son, my elder son, who is quite a student of the game, actually. Joseph is, you know, really taken a shine to football, and he really knows.
Has he now?
Oh, yes, he has.
Crack.
Yeah, he's really statistically driven, and he does a lot of the breaking down stuff. He always follows the Leroy Butler stuff in the Journal Sentinel, and he, you know, kind of an X's and O's guy. And what he said was, right away, he said, you know, that he thought that Randall was baiting him. I thought, I don't know about that. Well, then it comes out in the paper. That's what Randall said he was doing exactly, you know. So
yeah.
It was pretty electrifying, though. I mean, just to have the game end that way, that decisively, and in favor of your team. Because I'm already thinking, okay, they're going to score here. But the question is, will they go for two? Will they go for the win? Or
yeah,
will they go for the tie? And I thought that they'd go for the win, My son was saying, no, they'll go for the tie and take their chances in overtime. What do you think San Diego would have done had Randall not made that play, and Woodhead catches the ball, they score? Do they go for the one to go into overtime, or would they have gone for the win there?
I think they definitely go for the tie, because if you're on the two-yard line, the way they're running the ball, I think they wouldn't have – they would have been very one-dimensional, so I think the Packers would have lined up for the pass. I think also San Diego is the hot team at the end, so I think you play for overtime when you're the hot team. If San Diego had been up a lot, Packers were the ones that caught them, and then they get a chance to win, maybe that's a little bit different. So I'm – plus that is such a big decision to make. Do you think that coach – he did it before halftime.
Right.
But I think that was a bit of a Hail Mary. I think they felt, if we don't score a touchdown here, we're never going to catch them. But again, to the game, the way it was playing out, I think you play for overtime, because San Diego, you know, would have had a great shot in overtime. I think if they were moving the ball just really well. So, yeah, I assumed it was going to be overtime. I thought there was a chance maybe they go for two and we lose right away. When he drops back and he throws, I see Woodhead is open. The angle, you can kind of see him. Mm-hmm. And then when he knocks it down, it was just awesome. And I was thinking at the end, so for 3 hours I sat in a chair. I may have gotten up once or twice, but I watched something with commercials for 3 hours, completely enthralled with what's going on, right? I don't think there's any movie, certainly for 3 hours, that I would watch with that much interest. And then to have it be so interesting that the best part was the very last – it was the very end, right?
Yeah.
I mean, every movie, the climax happens like, I don't know, 10 minutes before the end, or and you kind of wind it down. But to have it be like it got more and more exciting until the end was the most exciting part. What else in the world is there that can replicate that emotion for 3 hours for you?
You know, I think well, it depends. If I suppose if you
other than Annie
if
Hall.
You use Viagra, I guess you probably can have 4 hours of that kind of excitement.
Wow.
But then you should call a physician. You should call Dr. Klaus immediately, I suppose.
That's true.
You know,
I still stand by my 3 hour point. That's right. But you have found something that's somewhat similar in its pattern.
That's right. Well, you know, I heard Steve Zabin say, I had to run to Madison today and back, and it was a few hours in the car, so I had on some podcasts, and I had Steve Zabin on. And he made a comment that he's made before about sports in general, but, you know, football, I think, in particular, given the time of the year that we're in. You know, there's reality shows on TV, but what reality show is better than following your sports team or your football team? And it kind of goes to what you were saying. I mean, you're sitting there, you're putting up with these commercials for 3 hours. I always watch it on DVR so I can get rid of those commercials, but it's the same thing. You know, it's an investment of at least a couple of hours, even if you're getting through the commercials. And it's a weekly thing. It's an installment. Now we're in. It's going to be a week off, but there's going to be all these other stories that come out. You know, will Ty Montgomery be able to play? Will Raji, you know, recover from that injury? You know, what is the response going to be to the last game? Problems they had. How will they adjust? And then, you know, who comes out on top with 2-6-0 teams? And you've got all this ongoing drama that goes on when you're following sports in the same way if you're following your favorite TV show. And I think Zabin's right. I mean, it's the best reality show on TV. It's unscripted reality show, and it goes on year-round. The sport changes, but it's the same idea when you're a sports fan. You follow your team. If you follow Premier League, like a lot of our listeners, especially overseas, do, it's the same kind of thing. It's this ongoing reality show that is – for people that get into it, it's the best TV show on, in my opinion.
It is. It really is truly amazing when I really think about how it impacts me, and the intensity of me watching a game is so much higher than almost anything else I can think of in my life. Work, TV shows, reading a book. I mean, just that it really has really very little comparison, which on the one hand may sound really sad. On the other hand, it's like I feel sad for people who don't have it. This is something that will probably for the rest of my life for 16 weeks, at the minimum of 16 weeks, will get me completely fired up for good or for bad. But when it is bad, it's bad. I mean, it really is a gut punch when these things, especially when it comes to the end. And I was thinking of these, like right now, the Cardinal fans, as
baseball,
they just lost the playoffs
in baseball. Cardinals, right?
Baseball Cardinals. I mean, they watched 162 games.
Of which the Cardinals won 100 of those games.
And all of a sudden, it seems like it's over in a heartbeat, right? I mean, just boom. Or Pittsburgh Pirates, they lost in a one-game playoff, just done.
Yep. The whole season, and then it's over like that. Well, but in a way, though, that's like
football. Right? Has that way, too.
When the Packers were 15-1 in 2011, and then they, you know, lose that first playoff game of the Giants, that's it.
Yeah.
You know?
It was hollow,
right?
You know? It just felt like a piece of me got ripped out. Yeah, it's like nothing else. It's pretty incredible, although I do feel like there will be repercussions for my kids for years and years down the road, as I've not found a way to enjoy the experience with them. I think I've completely turned them off to it, and maybe I've saved them a lot of heartache.
Well, it's one of the things, though, that they're going to remember about their dad is that, he sure loved the Packers, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, they'll say that at my funeral, you know?
Sure they will. And it's the same, and I'm sure, you know, that I don't expect to have a funeral. Don't care, actually. But whoever does remember me, that's a central part of who I am. You know, for me, the Packers, the Brewers, and the Badgers, I mean, that's kind of, you know, my three seasons, you know, and those things are important for lots of different reasons. And we've talked about this before in this podcast, those things that are such great distractions from the reality that you face every day, all the time, the pressures that you face. It's such a great release, and it is this engrossing reality show that you can get yourself absorbed in and put yourself to sleep at night thinking about those kind of things instead of thinking about the painful stuff that probably matters more, but the stuff that keeps you up at night. The sports stuff kind of puts me to sleep, and it relaxes me. It's a good place to be.
So you're saying sports is something you totally get absorbed in that ends with a great release that makes you sleep at night?
Exactly.
Is that what I understood what you said?
Yeah, I think you understand where I'm going with that.
I think I do. I think I do. Hey, back to the game.
Yes.
First, we have to mention the San Diego Kickers' last name was Lambeau.
I'm spelling it E-A-U instead of O at the end.
Yeah, although it's close to Rambo. I wonder if we should name Lambeau Field with an O, because that sounds tougher than sort of a French-ish sounding. So
I almost think
we could
should
change it.
An O with an umlaut?
That would be fine. Yeah. Now I have another point. This one is semi-serious on defense. I don't like it anymore now when Clay Matthews is rushing from the outside. I feel like he gets neutralized so much.
I agree.
Easier out there. I think there are a couple plays, third down, big plays. He doesn't make the first rush, isn't successful. He's out of the play. Where when he's in the middle, even if he gets blocked at first, he's still causing havoc, and I think he's in the field of vision. And I like him up the middle more, especially when he kind of does that sideways kind of jump between two blockers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's getting in there one way or the other. So
did you see the article from, again, the day before the game from McGinn? He wrote about comparing Junior Seau to Clay Matthews in that now that Matthews is playing the middle, the similarities between the two players.
Interesting. No, I hadn't seen
it. Yeah, and it's well worth the read. I encourage people to go dig it out if they can, because I think for a change, I think McGinn was really spot on that Matthews in the middle of the field is a difference maker in the same way that Seau was, probably not at that level, like as a Hall of Fame player, played for 20 years. But I think that Matthews is that same kind of high-intensity guy. And when they put him on the edge in the second half, I think that was a mistake.
Well, and maybe because Nick Perry is not playing, that's
right.
That's,
I mean, they kind of had to,
now,
and because they didn't have the center of their line. I mean, they didn't have Raji, and maybe that kind of changed that kind of chemistry that those guys had going on. I think that's a big reason why they get Raji back, because I think it makes 52 a better player. And when he's in the middle, I think that defense is better for it.
Well, I think that's true, but I still think that's a mistake. I mean, they got Elliott, Peppers, Mike Neal. I mean, so they're not just rotating along. They probably have Bolombo. You know, you can have enough rotation on the outside where you keep Matthews on the inside. I don't know anyone who would disagree with us at this point after watching what we've seen over the last year. And so I wonder if they'll move to that after the game. I mean, why put him out there? I really think he's so much better up the middle. I mean, and rushing the quarterback. I mean, not just playing middle linebacker against the run. I'm talking about on third and eight. Where do you want Clay Matthews coming from? I think you want him bouncing around between the tackles, not around the outside. But
well, you know, it's also just in terms of making plays. When he's been playing in the middle, he had an interception in the first game. He recovered a fumble. Was it last game or game before last? I mean, he's just more in the mix of things. And I know he could be a threat on the outside. We see a lot of times he comes around, dips his shoulder, you know, strip sack, blah, blah, blah. But in the middle, when he's in the middle of the field, I think he is more involved in what goes on every play. You're not just a one-dimensional pass rusher. He's more than that, and he is stopping the run. He is more available for splash plays and turnovers. He's highly effective when it comes to rushing the passer from the middle of the field. I mean, he's so damn quick. I just think you're wasting him by putting him on the edge. They're better, and he's better in the middle. In fact, when he's in the middle, I was starting to think that this is your defensive player of the year.
I thought too. I thought after the Rams game, I think he's making a big bid for that. And then I just felt he was very neutralized. He did get the fumble recovery in this game. But he had six tackles, four solo, but no sacks. I mean, I feel like this guy with this defense, with the amount of third downs that they had, he should at least be getting a sack or two.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lost opportunity. I think that's one of the reasons why Rivers threw for 500. Plus, I think the one thing about when you're ready to snap the ball and you see Matthews in your line of vision as opposed to, you know, outside, I think if you know he's right there, I mean, he's coming right at you, I think is more
intimidating,
effective than, seeing, you know, having him being sort of flushed out to the side.
Well, he's also,
although I guess if he was behind me, I suppose I wouldn't like that either.
Well, he's one of those guys, he moves around a lot, and I know that's by design, but I think part of it's just, you know, he is, as Gary Ellerson says on his radio show, Clay is a hair on fire kind of guy, you know, and he plays that way. He's jumping around and he's moving and he's disruptive, and having him right in the middle where the quarterback's facing him and seeing him, you know, coming up to the gap, going back, going in a different gap, moving around, point, you know, there's just a lot of activity that I think is distracting and intimidating to the quarterback.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. Yeah. On every play on defense, I watch, I find where he is. And I remember I used to do that with Reggie White.
Yep.
Because if you watch Reggie White, it doesn't matter if he got to every play, every tackle, but you never stopped him. He was always pushing his guy around. It doesn't matter if he got there or not. And Matthews is not quite the same as dominance, but no. I mean, he's exciting to watch. He can be stopped, I think. If you get him in his first move, I think then he can stop rushing and then he kind of watches the quarterback. But he's something else. I mean, he really is something else.
Yeah, I don't think he's a Hall of Fame player, but I think he's in the Hall of Very Good. And I think he's you know, a Pro Bowl guy, going to be All Pro once in a while. I think he, you know, can be a Defensive Player of the Year. I just don't think he's one of the all time greats, mainly because. Up to this point, I think he's been largely a one-dimensional kind of player. He's had enough injuries that have limited him over
time. Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, the guy's still pretty young. I mean, I think at this point, he's not a Hall of Fame guy, but he might be. And he started out this season, you know, really until the last game, being just this field tilter, you know?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of dominating the side of the field, he's as good as any of the other Hall of Famers I can think of. I mean, what's the because I think there are some Hall of Famers. What's that guy for San Francisco and Dallas, Haley?
Yes.
He was like a big pass rusher,
Charles
right?
Haley.
Pretty good player. Charles Haley. I think he's a Hall of Famer, right? I think because he's been around for a while. I don't think he tilted the field like Clay Matthews.
I think there's Polamalu was one guy is like
was,
that.
He's a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah. Seau, I think, is a good example. Lawrence Taylor was that. I think Clay Matthews tilts the field like those guys. But you're right. It's not every game. I mean, LT was pretty much dominant all the time. Maybe it's just my memory of it is that way. But Clay, you know, when he's on, he is as dominant as any of those guys have been.
You know, it didn't seem like at the time there was any player that was like Lawrence Taylor. He was different and he was special. Nobody played quite like that. I guess no one played quite that high, probably either. So maybe that was partially a factor as well.
We're lucky to have him. I think anytime you got Rodgers on one side, Matthews on the other, we got a chance to beat anybody because on that particular play that you need to play, we've got a guy who is a blue chipper, you know, that can make a huge difference.
He's definitely, when it comes to those tags that they give him, you know, blue and purple and all that, he's definitely a blue player. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Peppers, on the other hand.
Peppers came up big. When he had to come up big in this last game. I mean, part of the reason I think that Randle could make that play was that Peppers was in Rivers' face.
That's what I didn't see it. Remember at the time, I guess that's what I heard is that he made a big push and, you know, maybe Rivers couldn't get quite enough zip on the ball allowed him.
He hit the quarterback. He hit Rivers after.
Oh, did he? Okay. Yep. Well, I mean, he does show up at times. It's just, it's not every play. You want him to be Matthews too, you know, the two of them together. Well, I'll meet you at the quarterback kind of a situation. And he sometimes he looks great, and other times it's like, oh yeah, Peppers is playing.
Well, he's 35. You know, I think he's always been a player that's kind of chosen his spots. But at 35, I think you kind of have to. It's game six, and you know you're going to need him later in the season too. But you know, at a crucial moment in that game, Bull Rush went through his man, was able to hit the quarterback. You know, if he's not there, I mean, maybe Rivers, you know, has that fraction of a second to look a little bit longer, changes the throw, or maybe he throws it more quickly before Randle can get there. So yeah. I think it was, you know, 56 did a good job on that last play, and if that's the only play he showed up on, that was a good time to show up right there.
And if you have a good defense, you can have a guy that shows up once in a while because, you know, you don't depend on him. And maybe this is a good time for him, and a good defense for him to stay on for a while so he can show up and, you know, come on when the game's on the line.
So did you see this article or this note on Rodgers being the fastest quarterback to 30,000 yards passing? Now, fastest in terms of number of attempts to get to 30,000 yards.
I saw the stat, but I didn't think about it too much.
And I think he faster than Johnny Unitas, I think, was the previous fastest. I think I got that right. And it's, you know, you watch the guy all the time. You know, you nitpick, you know, holds the ball too long, blah, yeah, this. And the guy is really, really special, and he won't set some of these records because he sat for 3 years behind Favre. But Packers, he turns 32 in December. They've probably got five good seasons left with this guy, assuming there's not serious injury. And that milestone just kind of reminded me that, you know, it's another example that this guy is special. You know, he is that guy on the side of the football. We talked about Clay Matthews being the guy on the other side of the football. Critical. I mean, just a critical player. And I think you lose Matthews, the whole defense changes. You lose Rodgers, the whole team changes. He's definitely, in my opinion, he is a Hall of Fame player. No question in my mind about that at all. And I just wanted to mention that stat because it underscores that this is somebody that Packer fans maybe we're all maybe guilty of just taking the guy for granted. You've got him locked up for a long time. We've been with him for, you know, 10 years. And it's always good to remember that this isn't forever. This is for a window of time. And, you know, you're going to be telling our grandchildren, you know, about, yeah, I saw Aaron Rodgers play every game he played, you know. And that's pretty darn special.
That is great. And, you know, experiencing it with the amount of emotion that I, you know, watch these games. I'm not watching on film and admiring it.
It's live, and when the anxiety is right there, and it's awesome. I mean, with him there, we should be winning Super Bowls. I mean, he's that kind of special. That's what's so disappointing is when it's not happening. I mean, between the run we've had with Favre and Rodgers, we've had two Super Bowl wins. And only three appearances. That feels like – it feels short to me. It feels like it's not as good as it should have been. But
well, even the most dominant team in this era, which I think is – I think we'd probably say it was New England, right? I mean, they've been there six times. They've won four times. They've lost twice. But they've made it just – you know, I mean – they've made it six times. They haven't made it every year, and Brady's been their quarterback for, what, 15 years. It's really hard to win in the NFL, especially now when there's 32 teams. Luck plays such a factor, and I don't mean the quarterback for the Colts. I mean, you know, chance plays such a role in all of this. Yeah, it would be nicer, you know, if the Packers were in the Super Bowl more often, but the amount of winning – that has gone on since 1992. Super Bowls aside, I mean, it's, you know, this is what it's become, Dave. Packers are 6-0, and people are disappointed. Every call-in show you listen to, you know, and even sports writers. I mean, Jason Wilde's, you know, talking about, you know, how alarming it is, you know, that the Packers gave up 500 yards and that's not good. And yeah, that is true, but, you know, they did win the game. We shouldn't lose sight of those things.
But, you know, that's it does translate into down the road, like, oh, there you go. We lost because we haven't figured out how to get to the passer or, you know, our defense on the back end is not very strong. I mean, it does – I think we could see, you know, like in 2011, we lost one game, but I think we saw them limping toward the end, and we saw that this team has weak spots. And I think we expect excellence from this team because we're looking at the talent, and they should be excellent. But the other teams are good. You know, they're game planning against our weaknesses. We've had a ton of injuries. We have to recognize that that's got to play a big part of it. And you forget about it. I see Matthews. I see Rodgers. I think we should just do everything we've done in the past, and we realize, hey, Nelson's not out there. Montgomery's not out there. Cobb might be hurt. Lacy's clear. I mean, you go through and you realize it's a wonder that they won.
Well, but that's the thing about – well, actually, nowadays, pretty much any professional sport, you have a regular season, you got a postseason, and you mentioned about the Cardinals before. I mean, winning 100 games out of 162, I mean, that's freaking amazing. And you could make the argument that they were – the best team in Major League Baseball out of the 30 teams in that sport. And it's the same thing in the NFL. You know, we're going to come down to week 17 here eventually, and, you know, Packers might be a 14-2 team, and they may well have been throughout the course of a, you know, 4.5-month season. They may well have been the best team, but, you know, it doesn't matter then because of the playoffs. And in a way, that's too bad. And that's why I've said from the day we started this podcast, you know, winning in the playoffs, yeah, I know. That's when they hand out the Lombardi Trophy is at the end of that thing. But when you start getting into the postseason, and we mentioned this, or you mentioned it in terms of the Pittsburgh Pirates, second-best team in baseball, one-game elimination. They had it at home. They weren't good enough. They lost to the Cubs, and the Cubs advance. And that shouldn't negate the magnificent season that the Pirates had. And in the same way that loss to the Giants in 2011, yeah, it was horrible. They fumbled three times that day. I think they had fumbled three times the whole season. That, to me, just should not negate a 15-1 season when, during the course of the long haul, you proved that you were the best team in the league. It just, when it came down to this playoff structure, you know, you're where your team was at that particular time. Not over the course of a long period, but at that particular time, you weren't better than the Giants at home.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really a shame.
But that's the way it is, though.
That's the way it is. And we want number one.
That's right.
You know, we don't want best effort. We don't want, body of work.
You don't want to be the best team in the league. You want to be the team that wins the tournament.
At the end.
That's right. And that's a big difference. But that's how our sports are. You know, in a few weeks, they're going to hand out the World Series trophy. They won't give it to the best team. The best team is done playing. They'll give it to the team that was playing the best at that point in the season. Looks like it might be the Mets now. You know, so I saw the Mets play this year. I don't think they're the best team in baseball, but they're the team that's playing the best at the time it mattered when they hand out the trophies. So there you go.
Well, speaking of winning, should we go through our betting lines?
You know, I'd like to do that. And I'd like to also then talk about betting lines for Denver even. So, you know, we're looking ahead, baby. And by the way, kudos to our guy, Mike. This guy is knocking it out of the park, baseball analogy. Thank you, Mike, for doing this for us. We really appreciate it. And the spreadsheet's fantastic. So thank you so much for that.
It's good work, and I sent him an email because I didn't get it, and I think it went into my spam somehow, but I have it, so Mike, if you get my email, don't worry about it. All right, so we had 8 different categories. We'll go through them quickly, and this is against the Rams. Remember that game?
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. I believe the Rams were white that day.
They were losers.
Yes.
That's correct. So the first one I had, how many touchdowns would Rodgers have? You set the line at 2.5. I said the over, and it was the under.
Wait,
I don't know if you have the stats
loser?
In front of
you. Man, you are a loser.
Well, wait till you hear how well I did. Okay. The second one is how many Green Bay defensive sacks would there be? You set the line at 3, and I believe they had 3.5. I'm sorry. I said the over, and apparently they only had 3, which
God, these lines are fantastic.
They are, and you know, going back to that game, talking about how many sacks they had, I was surprised only 3 because I felt they hit Foles.
Well, they
a number
of
times.
They hit him again and again and again, yeah.
Yeah, quarterback hits they have is 12.
Yeah.
I went back to look at that. Number of Green Bay interceptions, you set the line at 1.5. I took the under and interceptions. Do you have that one handy? Maybe I got that one right. I had the under. It was the over. I'm sorry. I had the under. It was 4. It's late. They had 4 interceptions. I don't even remember all of those.
It's 11 o'clock at night. We'll give you a little grace.
I remember Quentin Rollins got a touchdown.
He had 2 INTs, and he had a pick 6. And it was a
that
sweet
was
thing.
All
and ha-ha Clinton Dix, right, had one, as I recall.
He did.
Micah Hyde. There you go.
There's our 4. How about this one? I had Todd Gurley rushing yards. You set the line at 75, and I took the under. And apparently he did a little bit better than that. He had 159 yards, which was the inks of the day back then.
Mm-hmm.
Number of punts by Green Bay. You set the line at 3.5. I took the under. The correct one was over. I didn't win that one either. I don't know what it was. Number of interceptions for Aaron Rodgers. You said there would be. I said there wouldn't be. And there were 2 of them.
Yes.
One that was not
one that was
fault.
Tipped up in the air, and one was a miscommunication, I think.
And a very, very good play. I thought that was a good play. Nick Foles, quarterback rating, you set the line at 92. We all took the under from that. That was correct. I don't know what it was. And then this one, which I'm going to repeat this for this next week, will they run a trick play? And everybody said no. And I don't know if they will, but I want to keep that running to see if someone will be brave enough to throw down a yes and see if that happens. A trick play similar to what the Colts ran against the Patriots, that would count as a trick play.
Well,
it doesn't have to be a good trick play.
As I recall, the Rams did do that trick play, right? The
Rams did.
Right.
We did not.
Okay.
I was talking about the Packers. At least I believe so. Yeah, so we count that. So the winner with 5 correct is Jared Stevenson.
Hey, baby, Jared. Nice job, fella.
The loser with only 1 correct is me.
You are a loser, my friend.
I am cleaning up after Jared after he takes down the casino, hotel and casino. So that's this week. Do you want any for this week?
Well, I want to acknowledge the guys that played. Of course, our guy Mike played, and unlike these same day sports fantasy things, he wasn't running an algorithm that allowed an employee to win. So Mike played Jeff Tom, Dr. Klaus was in there at Lambeau's, Greg Carson, Tom Elmer, our domestic lawyer, Tom Freeman, now retired, but still our guy from San Francisco. So thank you to everybody who participated in the betting lines, and we're going to set them now for Denver.
All right, so Denver, I have seven lines. All right, first of all, given what I've seen of Denver, I think, one, Peyton Manning is not very mobile, and I think they're getting a lot of pressure, and this is the Packers. Got 2 weeks to rest up, so how many sacks do you think Green Bay will have on Peyton Manning?
Well, the Statue of Liberty is more mobile than Peyton Manning, and he's gone. I don't know if you've noticed this. He's gone to just kind of like, you know, it's sort of like they used to say, you know, when Bobby Knight would say, you know, if rape was inevitable, lay back, and you know,
a great thing to bring up.
Yeah,
but
well,
yeah,
but this is kind of what Peyton Manning, when a sack is inevitable, just you know, fall down, and that's kind of
he just takes
he just takes it like a man. While laying down. So
I think I just found our title.
Yeah, okay. Well, we have fun with the titles over at PackersTalk.com. So, yeah, we'll have to use that.
If you haven't paid attention to last year's Seattle title, you need to look at that one again.
Look at that carefully.
If you – maybe everyone that's super obvious, but I haven't – I thought that was much more brilliant than – No, anyway,
well,
but go ahead.
You are an undiscovered genius. Let's face it, you know. Okay, so sacks on Peyton Manning. I'm going to set that line. They're going to try to get it out of his hands quickly. I think people know that's kind of the way you – and by it, I mean the football, Dave. I'm gonna set it at 3.5.
Three and a half. All right. I am going to take – I'm going to take the over.
He gets it out of his hands quickly, Dave.
he can sleep better.
That's right, exactly.
All right, so this one is how many rushing yards? You could go negative on this. If I take Stark's rushing yards and subtract Lacy's rushing yards, what is that number going to be?
Okay,
this week.
So Stark's minus Lacy. So in other words,
yes.
If Lacy has more yards than Starks, we're in negative territory.
We're in negative territory.
Right.
Yes.
You know, he looks so hobbled. I mean, Lacy here looks so hobbled. It's hard to believe that in 2 weeks he's going to, you know, resume being the kind of player that he was. It's also up against a good defense. You know, Starks seemed to be the preferred guy this week too. But I don't think they're going to cashier Eddie Lacy that way. I'm going to say. I got to figure out that. I'm going to say it's going to be a negative number. I'm going to say negative 20. In other words, Lacy's going to have 20 more yards.
More yards than Starks. Oh, I know what you mean. Good question. I'm praising my own line here. I guess I'm going to go with the under, meaning it'll be more negative. I think maybe 2 weeks. That's a tough. Yeah, I don't know where I set that, but I'm going to just say the under just so we can move on. All right, so this is
– when you say under
– I mean that Starks – Lacy will do more than 20 yards than Starks. All right. How many sacks do you think Denver will get on Aaron Rodgers? Mm.
They have a hell of a pass rush there. But I think, you know, you can mitigate that to some extent by game planning it. But I'm going to set that – I'm going to set that at 2.5.
2.5. I'm going to take the over on that. I think that's going to be a problem for us. Number four, what do you think Aaron Rodgers' quarterback rating will be in Denver?
Well, yeah, you're playing on the road, and Mile High, you know, there can be some issues with altitude. oh, boy, good defense. I'm going to put his passer rating at... I'm going to put it at 94.
All right. I'm taking you over. This game is a Sunday night game, Monday night game? What is it exactly?
It's a football game, Dave.
Well, yeah. All right. Well, you look that up. I think it's a primetime game of some sort.
Well, if it's not, it should be because, you know, two undefeated teams, I'm sure somebody's going to come up with
elevate
that.
This thing.
Yeah.
I think that's when Rodgers is going to shine. I think it's a chance for him to – show up Peyton Manning. I think kind of passing the torch to, you know, officially to Aaron Rodgers here from Peyton Manning. I think that's going to be the storyline, and I think he's going to deliver. I'm going to put my faith in Aaron Rodgers here.
So it is, in fact, an NBC game, 7:30 game at night. So that would be what, Sunday night?
Sunday. All right, number five. How many catches will Jeff Janis have?
Yeah. Well, okay, so I'm going to say that Adams is back. Cobb should be fine to play. And who's the number three receiver in that equation? Oh, James Jones.
James Jones.
So that would mean Janis is number four guy, which means not to get a lot of snaps. Let me set that at 1.5.
All right, I guess I'm going to go under with that. It's just, I think it's just going to get one.
Okay.
But I think he will get six. I like doing these. At what quarter are they going to show the highlight from the Super Bowl where John Elway does the
helicopter
spin in the air? Yes.
Yeah, that – now, can
– it has to be after the kickoff.
Okay, so – what if I don't think they're going to show it during the game? Because I think they'll show it before the game.
And not show it during the game? Then I guess you say zero.
Zero, okay.
I guess. So you're going to say zero.
Yep.
I'm going to say I think they're going to go – I think first quarter. I think those NBC, they do those graphics and story, behind-the-story stuff all – they do that a ton in the NBC games. So I think they're going for it right away in the first quarter. And then the last one, are they going to run a trick play, Packers?
Packers, they haven't – have they done one this season? I'm trying to think.
I don't care.
And now, by trick, we mean onside kick as well as a fake punt or field
goal. Statue of Liberty, I'll give a double reverse.
So like a flea flicker type thing?
Sure, any kind of fake punt, fake field goal.
I am going to say yes, they will do a trick play of some sort in this game.
All right, I'm going to say no.
All right.
All right, that's your lines.
All right. So let us know what you think. You know, there's a variety of ways you can communicate. We usually like to have them go right to Mike, though, right? Is that the best thing? Because I know sometimes they come to us, but it's probably best if you go right to Mike on those things. Now,
yes. Don't clutter my inbox.
You know what
Send
would be really handy is if we had Mike's email address to tell people, because I'm sure they probably haven't written it down.
I can come up with something here relatively quickly. Can
I probably can too here. Let's get Mike's email address, because we're always prepared here on Packers Therapy, as you can tell. Okay, it's MITNOMILLER, Mitnomiller @gmail.com, or gmail.com, as some people like to say, MITNOMILLER @gmail.com. That's our guy, Mike. He is the tabulator.
Yeah,
Mike Miller is the tabulator.
Yeah, so he does a great job.
He does. He does a
excellent,
fantastic job.
All right.
All right.
Anything
so,
else?
Yeah, let me see.
We got our trip.
Yeah, I'm going to do one. We got a number of communiques this week. I got some very nice well wishes from our team chaplain. We appreciate that, Pastor Kevin. I had a little surgical encounter a week or so ago, and I got the blessing of Pastor Kevin, and I live. So maybe, maybe that was because of the good prayers I got from Pastor Kevin. So we want to thank Kevin for that. Also, we got, let me see, who else was in touch with us this week? Oh, this is from Jameis, and I thought this was good. He asked, because he wasn't in on the deal with Mason Crosby and, you know, Beyond Pot and all that stuff, this running joke we've had. And it was because, you know, you thought that he looked like he was stoned, and that's when he was missing field goals. And so,
no, I'd read an article that if someone who starts taking pot, smoking pot, that you see a sharp reduction in their performance. And I thought that's what happened with Mason Crosby. So I just read that article, and I postulated that as a possibility, and you laughed at me.
I did. I did, in fact. And so anyway, Jameis wanted to know, the backstory. And so I told him, and he was unsatisfied. He was nonplussed by the whole thing. And he said, can we come up with a better story? Maybe meeting Mason in a Mexican prison after a drug bust. And you know what, Jameis? I think you're right. we're going to throw out this old story, even though it's true. And from now on, it's going to be Dave's encounter with Mason Crosby in a Mexican prison. And that's what the whole backstory is on Mason Crosby being stoned on the football field. So thank you for helping us with that, Jameis. We do appreciate your help and participation, as always. Okay, so there is some activity, though, involving our team physician. And you've been working hard on this, Dave. So why don't you tell people what's up?
So we are Dr. Klaus is coming to America, like the movie.
Because he's got our bag of goodies that he has to give to us. So
that's
prescription
right. And it's
now.
Time for yes, we should put in our prescription request. We are going to the game. Chris, me, and Dr. Klaus are going to the game. It's the Lions game, which is November 15. So this was Dr. Klaus's idea, which I think is a terrible one, but I'll throw it out there anyway. If anyone is at the game and wants to get together and meet up, which would be mildly fun and probably mildly terrifying at the same time, but if anyone would be interested in going to the game, to email us at our email address, which Chris will tell you about shortly, and then we'll figure out sort of if there's any interest in doing that, and then maybe Dr. Klaus will buy everybody a beer. And that's sort of the... I think that's what we decided on. So do you want to throw out the email address?
Well, before I do, I'm going to let people know that, Dr. Klaus is a licensed physician in the country of Norway, and he will, given his specialty, he will be providing any male person that attends. He will be providing breast cancer screening and doing pap smears for any of the guys that show up. So that will be entertaining, and I think you should take advantage of that. So if you want to, kind of get together with me and Dave and Dr. Klaus, who speaks wonderful English, by the way, don't worry, there'll be no, heavily accented Norwegian or lutefisk dinners happening. You can contact us at PackersTherapy@PackersTalk.com. PackersTherapy@PackersTalk.com. If you're going to be going to that game on the 15th of November, you like to meet us, like to hang out a little bit, say hi, we would love to do it. Just get in touch with us, and we'll figure out a place where we can kind of meet up, and it might be fun. Or it could be a disaster. Who knows?
It could be.
Either way, you want to do it.
You'll sign things for, like, a very low fee, too, right? Won't you? Your autograph has come down in price?
Well, I was going to do some miming. I won't be signing. I'll do some miming. I'll do the thing, when you're in the box or you're leaning up against the wind. Yeah, so... That by itself will be a lot of fun.
To distract you from the pap smear that you're getting?
Well, yeah, not to distract me. I'm kind of looking forward to that.
I'm editing all this out.
Okay,
that's
good. See, I know that you're too lazy to do that, so I know this is going to be right in there.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll be asleep in 5 minutes.
Well, really? Okay, well, good for you, big fella. Anyway, I think that probably wraps it, unless you got some pop culture you want to lay on people here.
The only thing that comes to mind, which I was really great, is I watched a documentary this week called Bat Kid Begins.
Huh, okay.
It's Bat Kid, like Batman, but Bat Kid Begins. It's a documentary about a young kid that's, 7-8 years old, whose wish, his leukemia, his wish was to be Batman for a day. And I don't know if you recall reading this story. This happened back in 2013, but they basically transform San Francisco into Gotham City. And the documentary follows both, from the origination of the idea to doing this for this kid, which they thought would be, in a park with, a couple hundred people and let's, generate some interest, to what basically shut the whole city down, and hundreds of thousands
of
people
remember this, yeah.
Showed up for this. And the documentary I just saw on iTunes, and I just watched the trailer for this thing. It'll make you cry. But it's such a feel-good, it's a great 90 way to spend 90 minutes to watch this thing, this cute little kid, and what all these different people who didn't know him came together to make this wish come true. And then also the... how everyone in San Francisco, like, all mobbed together, but then basically just cooperated with the police, and there was no rioting, there was nothing. It was like a really restoring of humanity kind of a situation. So I loved it. It was really fun. We watched it as a family, and that's a fun recommendation. I hope people watch that.
This week I saw an old black and white film from the 30s, 1936, called The Petrified Forest. And it was the movie that kind of put Humphrey Bogart on the map. And it was based on a stage play from the middle 30s, and they made it into a movie. You can tell watching the movie that it was a stage play. Bogart in it is quite good, but Leslie Howard is the star of the movie. And again, an old-time actor. He died during World War II, as it turned out. But I found the guy captivating. I had heard of him. I'd never seen him before. And also Bette Davis is in it as well, as a 28-year-old Bette Davis, kind of a hottie, as a matter of fact. So if you're looking for a movie, you're looking for something in black and white, you know, once in a while you kind of get that feeling, check out The Petrified Forest. I think that that's a good one, and it's only an hour and a half long, so it's not a huge commitment of your time.
That I don't think qualifies as pop culture. I think that's we should call this segment the ancient history segment of.
Well, hey, the thing that you just laid on people that's going to make them cry, I mean, that's not really pop culture. That's not fun. That's more this intellectual hooey. That's what you liberals are all about in your intellectualism.
Who, me?
Yes, you.
No, crazy, I live in Missouri. You know. If you want to watch an 100-year-old hottie, is that basically what?
Hey.
You're recommending here?
You've not – a 28-year-old Bette Davis, she was getting it done. Hey, don't knock it till you watch it, The Petrified Forest. Not a bad film at all.
All right. You've made it sound captivating.
All right. Well, that's my mission. My work here is done, as is this podcast. Packers heading to the bye week at 6-0. Dave and I are kind of on a recurring bye week as it is. We do a podcast. We have a personal bye. We do a podcast. We have a personal bye. Now the Packers are on a bye, so we're going to take a bye, too, next week. We'll be back, though, after the Broncos game. We'll have another podcast for you. But until that time, I'm Chris.
I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.